Don't knock your singing skills. I'm gonna knock all that shit.
You crazy. You're a hater, bro.
Yes, I am. But this is nothing new. You knew that already, though.
Stop hating. It's because I'm black, isn't it?
Call me old man Wade.
Damn you, old man!
Wade.
Old ass man.
Shut up, old man. You smell like fart.
No. Man.
Old man.
Wade. He's so old, he got a podcast on cassette.
Fuck, you're old.
Damn it, Wade.
And welcome to the Old Man Wade Show. I am your host, the God of Stubborn, the Lord of Laughter, the Sire of Sarcasm, Old Man Wade. And I'm here with my co-host, the pinnacle of political perfection, Super Wagabi.
What up, everybody?
And this is kind of cool. I've got to interview some people here and there, but I've actually never been able to interview people who've written comic books. So this is really exciting for me. So why don't you guys introduce yourselves?
Hi, I'm Ed Cannell, and I'm one of the co-creators and co-writers of Invasion from Planet WrestleTopia, along with Matt Enten here. And we have, so Invasion from Planet WrestleTopia, just real quick, it's a 6-issue miniseries, and it's about a disgruntled professional wrestler declares himself Galactic Champion of the Universe on live TV, and of course his boast goes out into outer space. And a planet of aliens known as WrestleTopians are not happy to hear this and invade Earth. So we've written 6 comics.
Where is number 6?
More games.
And some other stuff.
Yeah.
And a movie.
And yes. I did a quick rundown of IMDb, but I was more excited about the comic book stuff. And then I found out that Maneater is under one of your IMDb's. I was like, oh, I see the previews and I want to play this game.
Yeah. So that was the last game that I wrote. And actually, Ed came on board for that for about a month and a half and helped out. But yeah, that was the last like big title I worked on. And that came out 2 weeks ago.
So, Javi, you had a question that actually prompted us to start early, so why don't you ask a question?
Yeah, it was interesting to find out that you guys actually live in separate states. And I was asking Ed here, other than the video game development, during the creation of the comic book, were you guys working remotely? And if so, how do you think that affected the creativity process and collaboration when creating the comic?
Yeah, so I'll just real quick. Matt and I first met while working at the same game development studio, early 2000s, outside Chicago. So of course we were both writers on the same video game called Leisure Suit Larry Magna Cum Laude.
And, wow, that's actually pretty amazing.
Yeah. Pretty much us writing there, for better or worse. And so obviously we're collaborating a lot and intensely. And then when we got laid off, which happens a lot in the game industry, we realized we really enjoyed working together. We kept doing that. We would meet, face-to-face and do, we actually wrote a bunch of screenplays. And that's actually when, we came up with this concept anyway for WrestleTopia. And then throughout the ensuing years, life took us in a few different directions. So I moved back to Portland, where I'm from, and became a freelance game writer and decided I didn't want to move around anymore. I didn't want to be a full-time game industry employee and have to move every 2 years. I just wanted to put down roots. And so hence the freelancing. Matt took a little bit of a different path. He's worked a few other studios, and been a freelancer. So most of our collaborations with the comic book in particular have been, I want to say have been remote. And to be honest, I think like at first it feels kind of daunting and I don't know, are you still going to have the same good, back and forth? But it really, after a while, you get used to it. And really it's for me, I feel like it's being in the same room. When you collaborate with somebody long enough, when you get used to it, I don't feel like it holds us back really at all. And in some ways, I think there's a few advantages. But and that's my take on it. You know, it's been pretty smooth, and I honestly enjoy doing it. As you know, it'd be great to see Matt in person. I live in the same town again, but
I moved to Portland for 2 years, but then, you know, I'm a rambling man. What can I say?
So where would you guys like to start first? Because I have a fun game called This or That. We could start with we could get into WrestleTopia. I have some notes, and I took some.
I'm interested in these notes. Now hold on, you're giving me some nice options here, which I appreciate. Before Matt got hopped on here with us, Mark was like, oh, WrestleTopia, I have a love-hate relationship with that comic.
So I
feel like we got to get into that before we get anywhere else.
Okay, so my hate has nothing to do with the comic book. I'm just upset that I got to issue 5 and then it stopped. And I'm like, you have got to be kidding me.
Yeah, I'm like, where is this number 6? I can't find it.
Yeah, I
would blame our collaborators here because we had the thing written like 5 months ago.
The great art takes a long time. And the good news is, that 6 really is almost done. We just got the lettering done. So we just have to proof the lettering a little bit more, just to make sure it's all good, and that's it. I mean, and then it should be up on Comixology within a couple weeks, and that'll wrap up the series. And it's a 45 pages, so it took a really long time, but this was not. It was 45 pages of panels, so it was a lot. And I think also one thing we found out is that it's hard to keep a team of artists together who are freelancers, right? Like, even we paid all the artists, we paid them their full rate. However, you know, they're juggling multiple projects. You run into things like we had a colorist who was working for DC, and if DC comes back to you and says, hey, I think we're gonna recolor these last 100 pages you did. Sound good? Okay, thanks, bye. They kind of have to then, you know, turn their attention to DC, and Suspicious Behavior Productions maybe doesn't quite have the stroke to be first in front of DC or Marvel. So it's just, there's a lot of challenges, even when you're paying people, and even when you're paying folks, and even when they're all enthusiastic, you know, that artwork takes a long time. So we do apologize, but it's coming.
Yeah. That's actually brings me to something I was thinking about when I was reading the book. When Old Man Wade is my introduction to you guys, to be honest with you. I've never heard of Invasion from WrestleTopia.
Oh, you're a company.
Yeah, and so my expectations were, I don't know, I don't really know what my expectations were. It was between two guys working in the basement and, you know, what you just described, a much larger collaboration with dedicated artists. And when I started reading it, what kind of drew my attention was the quality, the storytelling, the pacing, the artwork. It was really good. And I started reading issue 1, and I didn't stop. I sat on my couch and I continued reading it. I'm not a wrestling fan. It's not that I hate wrestling or I have some issue with wrestling. I just haven't been into it for a while, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. Is it possible for you guys to give a small introduction of the series just for the listeners that aren't aware of it? I think that would be super dope.
Yeah, you want to...
No, Ed, you've mastered the pitch.
So we talked about how, you know, the high concept, but the protagonist is Rory Landell. When we first meet him, it's the heyday, the golden age of wrestling, and he is a heel. He's a bad guy in the ring. He's been promoter has promised him that he's going to get the world title that night. And then the promoter reneges on that promise. So being Rory, having a huge ego, he goes and he makes himself a galactic championship belt using a pizza box from like Galaxy Pizza. And he cuts a promo before his match and says, I'm the Galactic Champion of the Universe. I don't give a crap about the world title. It means nothing to me. I am the champion of the whole galaxy. Well, obviously, it was pay-per-view. The TV signal goes out into space. And it's intercepted by WrestleTopians, who are this planet of alien wrestlers for whom wrestling is not just real. It's like their whole way of life. It's like everybody on the planet is a wrestler who lives their gimmick. Hence, it becomes a Earth. So it's you know, if you think about it a little bit like Galaxy Quest meets wrestling, or you know, what else
we get Space Jam a lot.
Space Jam. Yeah. yes, it is.
So it's a six.
I got a little Evil Dead out of it, especially with the main protagonist. He just a kind of a hero.
He is very ass.
Yeah, we were on a podcast and someone was like, God, if Bruce Campbell were like 20 years younger, I could totally see him playing Rory.
Oh, God, yes.
Forget that. I'm pretty sure he'll put a curse on the corset.
You know, it's really, as a side note, I watched some horror movie the other day, and I'm watching this movie, and I'm thinking, like, who this actor? He's a young. He looks so much like a young Bruce Campbell. Is this Bruce Campbell's kid? Like, what? I looked it up, and I did not realize that I had been watching CM Punk.
Oh, yes,
or something like that. It was so bad. It was good.
Yeah, I mean, I'm fully aware of who CM Punk is, but I really haven't watched him that much. Matt and I, we don't really follow wrestling anymore like we did when we were young. We kind of keep up on it, but I was like, well, all right, maybe CM Punk could be Rory Lindell one day. Who knows?
Oh, God, he would be so good. He would be so good at that. I was picturing him, like, sitting cross-legged, giving a promo, and then, like, unveiling the belt. I'm the Galactic Champion. And then throwing the microphone and storming out. Oh, man.
It seems like he has the personality for it, you know.
So this isn't spoiling anything. I think it's within the first couple of pages, and I made sure that I screen capped certain parts because there are certain points I want to talk about. So you brought up how the WrestleTopians, like, wrestling is their life.
Yeah.
And this guy gets a message, and he goes, Deep Space George, WrestleTopia, weighing in a big super dad of 452 pounds. The King of Crush, the Sultan of Squash. And I'm like, this is, and I could not stop laughing. And I'm like, this is the goofiest shit I've ever seen, and you got me. I'm good. Like, there's nothing you can do to me that's going to take my eyes away from this.
Yeah, I love that scene, and then we debated on whether or not to start with it. But I actually feel like it does a really good job of showing you what these WrestleTopians are like, because they're communicating on the radio, and instead of saying, you know, and it's like, you know, WrestleTopian Central Command, you know, what is your report? And it's like, you know, it shows you how they talk. And then when this WrestleTopian, who's in a spaceship and is monitoring the satellite signals from Earth, when he gives his report, like, just like you said, he introduces himself, like, you know, weighing 452 pounds from Deep Gorge, WrestleTopia. it gives you some insight into their personality, as well as being, yeah, it's one of my favorite scenes as well.
But I love the fact that, like, and then, like, the idea, so when they come in and they're invading Earth, and, like, the Secret Service is shooting bullets, and the bullets are bouncing off of them, I'm like, oh my God. Then, like, one guy is angle slamming a kangaroo.
I think that was a camel, right?
No, you're right. It was a camel. He angle slammed a camel. I couldn't turn away. And one of the things that me and Javi are really into is storytelling. So no matter how goofy something is, the story has to really flow. And it did. So, like, you know, sure, you may be able to get some people in just by having, like, the humor factor in this. But within the humor factor, and even within the first five issues, these characters grow. You find out a lot about them. I don't want to say too much, because I think people should definitely go out and grab this on Comixology. but like the characters learn lessons, you get into their backstory, you find out why they are the way they are, and then it has this really 1980s, 1990s vibe about it before wrestling turned into the Attitude Era, before WCW, before the Monday Night Wars, when it was a little more, I guess wholesome would probably be the best word for it, when the colors were brighter and the wrestlers were louder. And I thought that was cool. So you guys, you said earlier that you used to be wrestling fans. So, like, what was your introduction to wrestling originally?
So there's 7 years between Ed and me. So we kind of, like, the era in which we sort of overlap is I was, like, a little kid right during sort of, like, the rock and wrestling era, right when Hogan became big. And then you started to see, you know, Saturday Night's Main Event and stuff like that. So I watched pretty regularly from, I don't know, that would have been about 85. And I dropped off a little bit, like, right at the beginning of college, and then got back into it, right, you know, in the Attitude Era. And so I watched, like, you know, on and off from about 85 to around 2001, 2002.
Yeah, so I was born in the early 70s, and it really, I mean, old enough to remember, like, we didn't have cable. We just had, like, these three channels. But what was, growing up in Portland, we had an NWA, what they call a territory, right? And if you're familiar, the NWA, the National Wrestling Alliance, would have these territories around the country, around the world, really. And then we had Pacific Northwest Wrestling. Was an NWA territory, so I was able to watch it Channel 12, like Saturday nights or something. And you know, that, so I was just, in the late 70s, was just, became fascinated with wrestling. And being a little kid, thinking at first, you know, I'm like probably like 7 years old, without a doubt this is real. Like, there's no part of me that thought that it was choreographed or scripted or anything. And then, of course, you know, watching it all through the 70s, when cable then finally arrived, everybody, or pretty much everybody who had cable all over the nation, was treated to this station out of Atlanta, Georgia, WTBS, which in Oregon was Channel 17. That was just a local station for a while in Atlanta, but it went national thanks to cable. And what was special about it is they had 3 hours on Saturday, 3 hours, I think, of NWA wrestling. And that, at the time, was in the 80s, early 80s and beyond, was the hotbed of Ric Flair and Dusty Rhodes and, you know, the Rock and Roll Express and just all those guys, right? So I became, you know, further fascinated with that wrestling. And I watched the WWF, and I liked it too, but I think I was really attracted to what the NWA was doing, which was trying to attract the, like, more blue-collar, you know, dudes who wanted to see a fight.
Yeah.
Wanted to see blood. And the WWF was trying to target families, and both were fun, but I was really into, like, Dusty Rhodes and Ric Flair, and those guys were fascinated me when I was growing up.
Yeah. But even now, like, as a wrestling guy, like, you go back and you watch old Dusty Rhodes promos, he had this, like, electricity to him, like, you know what I mean? It didn't matter that he wore a polka dot singlet and with his belly out. It didn't matter because he was, something about him was cool. You know what I mean? Like, he just,
I don't know how he made himself. A lot's been talked about how, why was he so, he was just kind of like, this overweight guy. And like you say, when he joined the WWF, he was wearing a polka dot singlet and he was still cool. I don't know how. How we pulled that off.
You know, maybe it's just one of those things where, like, you find someone who, like, really, you ever work with someone who may not be as good as, like, everyone else, but they have this personality about them and this aura, and you're like, hey, I like them, so let's just work with them. And that's,
hey, was that a shot at me?
No.
Okay, it just like is.
So tell us about the creation of WrestleTopia and how it actually was birthed.
Well, we started out writing it as a screenplay. and like talk about being like far. So we actually sort of like came up with the concept while I believe we were still living in Chicago. And then by the time we actually got around to writing the screenplay, I was living in Europe and Ed had moved to Portland and we were trying to figure out the best times to talk, which, you know, it's really difficult because I think that's a 9-hour time difference. But we wrote the entire first screenplay during the 6 months I was living abroad. And absolutely no one was interested in it. Not even, we had a manager and we gave it to her and she's like, no. And we ended up kind of, you know, like it, something about it just sort of stuck with us. We did a teleplay for it. And it was like ostensibly going to be like an Adult Swim pitch for it because like I could definitely see something like this concept working well on Adult Swim. And then finally, Ed was just like, you know, let's just get something out there, right? And it's probably going to end up being very expensive when all is said and done because we're going to be personally funding it and we want good artists. You know, we want people with experience in the industry. And even if this, you know, sells 20 copies, at least we'll have something that we can put up on our shelves and say, look, this is what we did. This is, you know, because you work on a screenplay, it just sort of gathers dust on your hard drive. And so we just moved forward with it. And actually the first two issues we self-published. And then, you know, Ed can kind of pick up the story because he's out in Portland, which is sort of the hotbed of the indie comic scene. And, you know, out there is where he ended up hooking up with Starburns.
Yeah, I mean, but it's like Matt said, I think, you know, we've written other screenplays we really enjoyed on our own time. We both worked on a lot of video games as work for hire, right? And then with WrestleTopia, I think we both really loved the story. And you know, my impetus was really, I want to put this out into the world. I want it to exist. And I want us to be the ones that do it, you know? I don't want someone else to stumble on this concept. I want to put this out in the world. And if the worst thing that happens is you spend money and no one cares, I'll still feel really good about it. Like, I'll still look at this and I'll still be really proud. And it's also been really exciting for us to work on something that's our own. And we can kind of do whatever we want. We have the creative freedom to do what we want because it's our thing. And as Matt said, we did self-finance it. We were able to hire, you know, it's not inexpensive to do 6 comic books with professional artists. And the first one's 32 pages. Like I said, the last one's 45 pages. At the same time, it's doable, right? We have jobs. And we'd be remiss if we didn't thank our wives. Our wives have jobs, full-time jobs with health benefits, which is really nice.
Yeah.
So we have shout out to the wives, man. Or just the partners that support creative projects.
Yeah. And I don't want to make it sound like we were just sort of, you know, this is all, you know, just being supported by them in fully. So Matt and I both work full-time in the game industry. But we certainly, I don't think, could have done this without them, right? We couldn't
probably.
And they're both very supportive. But now it exists. That's really exciting. And we're trying to, you know, connect with an audience, obviously. But the main goal, the main objective for me is been achieved. Invasion from Planet WrestleTopia is a thing that you can pick up and read. And that's really exciting.
I love hearing that because I think that's a key component that a lot of people, I think, are missing from the creative process. I think a lot of people kind of stall out on projects that are way less daunting. Not to discredit it or you know, underestimate whatever anybody wants to do. But what you guys did was amazing, especially given the constraints put on you, you know, from life and just being at such a great distance from each other. But the fact that your goal was to get this project out there. It wasn't about making money. It wasn't about, you know, getting super famous. I think that if you have that passion behind your project and it's a labor of love and it's something that you're passionate about truly, you're going to get it done. You're going to get it done. That's great.
We'll take the money if it's there, you know. But I think the thing with comic books is it's a really cool medium, you know. But like if Matt and I write a screenplay, which is fun, like I like writing the screenplays, and when Matt and I collaborate, it's really fun. But no one cares about your screenplay. Like not even our parents want to read it, right? And there's other things too, but I think like if you write a novel and you finish it, or if you write a comic book and you finish the script and you can pay an artist or collaborate with an artist somehow to actually get it done, then it exists and people are excited to read it. I mean, comic books aren't that hard. It's not like if I give you a 120 page screenplay, that's a real burden. But if I give you a comic book, like, hey, that's fun. I'll read a comic book if you give it to me, right? And it's exciting to have something, to have WrestleTopia out there in a format where people will actually read and enjoy it.
I think the history of how this book developed kind of shows in what I liked about it. It seemed way more cinematic than, you know, a lot of other comic books I normally read. I hope that makes sense. Like even the comedic timing, I really don't want to understate how funny this book is. Like it's funny, and it's I don't know how you guys. I didn't know how you guys were able to convey that in that format. But finding out that it started off as a screenplay, pretty sure you guys had storyboards. I'm assuming, even just envisioning what it would look like on screen, on film, as a cartoon, something. It really translates to an exciting and very easy book to read. It's like a bag of chips. You open it once and you're just gonna continue. Like it's that good to me. I know Old Man Wade hates it, but you know, whatever. Get to this later.
A lot of Pringles of the comic book industry. If you can.
But it was again, not to undersell the comedy. So let me go into another part of that. So when they finally everything gets set up, they're reading reports, and it goes, what are they doing? They're building a steel cage around Earth. And then what's the guy's name? Manifest Destiny comes in, hits dude with a chair, and cuts a promo in front of the world.
Matt is our Manifest Destiny writer. He's the guy, like, if Manifest Destiny needs to say anything, that's Matt writing all that stuff.
So please, 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 for the love of Jordan, please explain Manifest Destiny the best you can, because I fucking love him.
It's all Matt.
He was like, the Manifest Destiny very much started inspired by the Ultimate Warrior. And I think with a lot of our characters, they sort of, the more we kind of sit with them and let them marinate, they sort of just kind of transform into their own things, right? Because I think, like, if you probably, it's been forever since I've looked at like our original screenplays, but I think if like we went back and looked at our original screenplays, there'd be way more of an explicit nod to Ultimate Warrior. But it was definitely like Ultimate Warrior's bordering on nonsensical, hysterical promos were like a huge influence behind that character. And also his like really weird, rigid code of ethics that are just sort of unknowable by anyone but himself.
Oh, God. And this, it didn't make any. What was my favorite one? Load the spaceship with the rocket fuel. What are you talking about? So I have a friend of mine. He wrote a book. Steve Van Samson. He wrote it's a vampire book, and he starts and he was conveying the same thing. The idea of actually just putting it out there and saying that I finished it is inspiring. Like this podcast, for example, It didn't really, like, I was doing it, it was fun. It didn't really kind of take shape until I started doing this with Javi. And then now it became something else. So now we have this collaborative effort of something that's become something bigger than what it is. And, like, we don't get a ton of views, but, like, every so often I'll check and I go, someone's listening in Belgium? Why? but again, like, listening to the passion in your voices and talking about how, like, you know, a lot of people get, I think it's an inspirational thing to hear when the people are like, you guys are like, no one wanted to read the script, no one wanted to read the screenplay, no one wanted to take you guys on it, but now it's a comic book. And we've all seen, like, these random comic book characters that nobody cared about, these random comic book stories that no one knew, turn into projects. And then you guys said Adult Swim. I'm like, oh yeah, Adult Swim would eat this up. Even if it was just a 6-part project, and it was like, I would watch the hell out of this. Especially considering that, like, it's kind of poking fun at all the things that we love and hate about wrestling. Like, it is, like, it's, I personally, not even just as, like, I go in and out with wrestling. Sometimes I love it, sometimes I'm like, oh God, get this off my screen. But again, it made fun of all these things. Like, even something as simple, like, for me who watched a lot of it in the, like, the 90s, having one of the commentators go, will you stop? I giggled, and I was like, I wonder how many people picked up on that. And it's just little things like that that I appreciate, because it also shows that you guys are writing something that you knew, that you know about and you care about. So I just wanted to give you guys some praise for that, because, like I said, the book is great. The comic book is 5 issues out now. It's inexpensive. I highly, highly suggest getting it, especially now when there aren't a lot of new comic books coming out. Sure. You can get through all 5 of these. It's a fun read. It's an easy read. And, most importantly, it does have, rereadable value. Some comic books are good, you read them once, you're done, you put it aside, you'll never read it again. I will find, this is one of those things where I'll definitely find myself going back and reading it again. For, like, little random things, like, you may miss something in one of the promos. You may miss something that the main protagonist or antagonist says. You may miss someone jumping off the White House. Or, like, you know what I mean? So just little things like that I think you'll pick up on, like, later on. And yeah, it's fun. And sometimes, like, you don't really need, like, the deep X-Men stories, which I love, and you don't necessarily need V for Vendetta. But, like, you know, you go into WrestleTopia, and it's a good story. It's got great and vibrant art and characters that, like, you won't forget. Like, you know what I mean? Like, just looking at them, you're like, oh, they have that same thing of wrestling when they're, like, larger than life.
Yeah, there's stuff that I didn't even notice after reading it 5 times. Ed, like, put on our Twitter this image of a WrestleTopian with Santa Claus in, I believe, a leg lock.
Yeah, he had a
toehold, I think. And until that was up there, I didn't realize that in the scene... Was it Dennis? So 3D is the, when you meet them, they're a tag team, but you hear their backstory that there was a third member that decided to leave the business and become an accountant. And it's that guy who's there with his family for Christmas, like, witnessing Santa Claus. And I never noticed that until it was on her Twitter feed.
See, that stuff is great. And I think that adds, again, to the rereadability of this. It's like, geeks love Easter eggs, and you know, it shows that you guys had some real, like, I need to know who you guys had as artists on this, because they put their foot in this. Like, it's good, guys. Like, and I know there's not a lot of books to read now, but even if, you know, the shelves were stocked, this is something I would definitely recommend picking up.
Thank you for bringing that up. Our artist starting for the first 3 issues is Dan Scotti. And then he got real busy with his own webcomic, which is called Lavender Jack, which is really good. You can check that out online for free. So we turned the duties over to Kendall Good, who's great. You might just as well call him Kendall Great, because He already had some experience with working on the WWE comics, I think, for Boom. And really, so he brought it on home. We had Marissa Louise doing our colors initially. She got really, really busy. We brought in Jason Lewis for an issue. And the last two were done by Gio Butler, who's amazing. And then the lettering, the first three, done by this company called the Larger World Studios, which is with Dave Lanfear, and there's done a million comics. And then Sal Cipriano brought us home for 4 through 6. Like we said, it's hard to keep a team of freelance artists together over a period of years. But we just got we got amazingly lucky finding these really talented people to make the comic book look professional and look really good. They did a great. And we had some other artists chip in too. So we had this guy Scott Qualchek. And some other people help us with some cool back matter. So each of these 6 issues on Comixology has some exclusive sort of bonus material that won't be in the trade. So it's worth picking up if you want to check it out. And it's stuff that Matt and I took a lot of time to put together. We have ads from old wrestling magazines that our characters appearing in old, wrestling magazines and stuff like that. It's really cool stuff that we hope people will enjoy. And it's exclusive to the single issues. So
I want those trading cards, by the way.
For real, I want the bear.
Yeah.
I need the bear.
I would love if we could have those in the trade, like actual physical versions of those cards in the trade. With little perforations between the cards so you can,
yes.
If you want to permanently damage the value of your trade paperback, you can pull them out.
So we talked about WrestleTopia. I don't want to say any more about it because there's so much good about this. So I don't want people just go out and read it. Me and Superwolf will do, we'll make this next week or the week after is comic book read of the week. We'll wait till the series is over and then we'll start doing that. And we'll even add the whole thing about CM Punk, tag him in and go, hey, you should play this character.
Get him ready. Clear schedule.
So you've also done video games. So yeah. What are 3 projects individually that you think you're the most proud of?
Ooh, you're making us play favorites here.
Tell them about Valiant Hearts, because that was...
Yeah, Valiant Hearts is sort of our go-to. It was really one of... because we started out, and the first thing we ever wrote was the Leisure Suit Larry game. So as you would imagine, if Leisure Suit Larry is your only game credit, you kind of get tapped to do humorous titles. And Ubisoft, Montpellier, actually gave us a rare opportunity to do something a little more dramatic. So, being typical Americans, I don't want to speak for Ed, but I knew next to nothing about World War I. So I ended up, because the whole thing takes place, it's a World War I game. So I ended up reading 5 books about World War I before we flew out there. And it was just an incredible experience. It was also incredibly challenging because they wanted everything to be very historically accurate. So if we, our main American character, Freddie, he's part of the French Foreign Legion. And if the French Foreign Legion was in that X battle, we had to invent some plausible reason as to why he was there. So that aspect of it was incredibly challenging. And also, it's just... the opportunity to work on something that had such an emotional tug on players. I didn't know if we could pull it off, and we've gotten a lot of love back from our audience about that game.
Yeah, I'm looking at that now. I've never heard of this game before. It looks like it has a sort of indie feel to it.
Yeah. It was a smaller team at UB, so they were only 25 people, I think. And was there a physical version of it?
No, it was downloadable and typeable, but I mean, but it's interesting you say that because it really was. I know it seems crazy to think that, you know, a Ubisoft game is an indie title, but and obviously they, you know, they were using, you know, a lot of resources available to them from Ubisoft, but it really was a small group of passionate developers in Montpellier, France, who decided that if anyone was going to do a video game to commemorate the 100th anniversary of the war in 2014, it should be a French company. That was really important to them. And so it was really, yeah, really, really cool to be a part of that. And then I would just, I would also add, Matt and I had the good fortune to know the people at Twisted Pixel Games in Austin, Texas. Between the two of us, they've hired us to work on several of their games. Comic Jumper, Loco Cycle, Gunstringer, among them. And it was so much fun because those games were just so crazy. Like, Twisted Pixel really just has a long history of just doing just wild stuff, being wildly creative, and a real independent spirit. And we just got to work on just the craziest stuff for those guys. And I think the other thing I'm really proud and excited about is again, so this is Ubisoft, a different studio, but I got to work on their Mario Rabbids crossover game for the Switch. And that was a huge thrill because, you know, I'm working on a game, it's a Ubisoft game, but I'm working on a game with Mario and Luigi in it and all this stuff. And it was kind of like a weird dream come true. Like, I'm working on a game with Mario and Luigi and, you know, Princess Peach and all this. It's just crazy. So, anyway.
That has, like, strategy, a strategy component to it, correct?
It's like an XCOM turn-based combat, only it's very kind of humorous and fun and a little bit cartoonish in that way. It was really fun game. Yeah.
Due to my consumption of one of my favorite plants, my memory sucks, so I didn't want to just say it. My wife bought that game. And thinking it was a traditional Mario game, traditional Mario or Rabbids game, and I saw her playing it, and I'm a fan of XCOM, I picked it up. I was pleasantly surprised with that game. It's fairly complex and fun. I like that one.
You know what you should buy next for your wife?
Definitely. And Twisted Pixel, were you guys involved at all with the Explosion Man franchise?
There's not a lot of writing.
They certainly didn't, you know, need us for that one. But I have some cool. I have a cool Explosion Man plushie that I got from them a while ago. So, but I we didn't work on their first game was The Maw, which is also I loved, you know. Mm-hmm. And was their next project after that?
Comic Jumper? Explosion Man. No, I think Explosion Man was second.
Comic Jumper. So Comic Jumper is this, you play this protagonist who was fired from his own comic book. Comic book was canceled. So he has to make cameos in other people's comic books to try to make money and all that stuff. And so it was kind of like WrestleTopia is maybe a love letter to the wrestling business. Comic Jumper was their love letter, I think, to comics. And that was really, really, really fun to work on, too. Yeah.
So I won't keep you guys much longer, but I do have a fun game that you guys are actually going to be the first people to play this game.
All right, cool.
Ooh, we're the guinea pigs.
So I just warn you, there are no right or wrong answers. But you will be judged regardless.
That's life, right? No right or wrong answer.
So this game, Super Woke, we'll figure out some type of theme music to this, or we won't, because, you know, super super professional over here.
I could sing if you want.
Sure, show me what you got.
Oh, you really... Okay, never mind. I thought you were gonna like punk out. Sorry, bad game of chicken.
Toss a coin to your witcher. Okay, that's all I got. All right, so we're playing a game called This or That, and considering that you guys work on video games and you're also wrestling fans, I tried to make a collaboration of a little bit of both in this game of either or. So we'll go Ed then Matt, only because Ed was on it first. Then we'll go with you. Are you ready?
Yeah, let's do it.
Here we go. Question number one: A Journey in Space with the Green Lanterns or Silver Surfer?
I'm gonna go with the Green Lanterns because I think it would be more fun and ultimately more comfortable. Instead of balancing on a surfboard, you just have the Green Lantern make you like a giant green bubble with a couch inside and like a TV, and I'll have some chicken wings and just relax while they push me around.
Matt, what you got?
Yeah, I gotta say, I agree with Ed on this. I am more of a Silver Surfer fan, but I just don't see him being a very fun traveling companion.
Superboy, what do you think?
Man, I am also a Silver Surfer fan, but I was going to say Silver Surfer until Ed had that tremendous point. It'd just be more comfortable. I mean, the power cosmic could do all things, but I don't know. I can't see the Silver Surfer creating a couch and a TV for my comfort.
That's 100% true. A motivational speech from Captain America or Superman?
Ooh, that's a good run. I think Superman. I think that he, not being an Earthling, he's a little more objective, and he's a little less. You know, he cares about us all in the same way that like a loving parent would. Whereas I think Captain America's cool, but you might, you know. I don't know. He might be more about kind of kicking you in the ass, and that would make me sad.
Yeah, I'm not feeling very patriotic right now, so I'm gonna go with Superman.
Gee, I wonder why he says sarcastically.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Is it pre-Ta-Nehisi Coates Captain America or post Ta-Nehisi Coates Captain America?
Because
if it's before Captain America got woke, I'm going with Superman.
I was just going to think Chris Evans, America's Ass Captain America.
That could work too.
Worst enemy to have, Mystique or Lex Luthor?
Mystique or Lex Luthor? Oh, wow. That is a tough one. I think Lex Luthor, and here's why. I think Mystique might just kill you and it's over. I think Lex Luthor would just never stop screwing with you. He lets you, and he uses immense wealth and devious mind and to make your life a living hell forever. Whereas Mystique might just shapeshift into someone who looks like your spouse and then cut like the neck and you forget him. It's forgotten. It's underwater under the bridge.
Yeah, I'm way more afraid of billionaires than I am of any characters with superpowers.
Avi, who you got?
I'm going to go with Mystique on this one. Because, you know, she could be anything, and I don't know. I just wanted to be different this time. That's about it.
So, I was actually, fun
the
fact.
The old contrarian.
Fun fact, that was a trick question. Mystique killed Lex Luthor, so that, and she turned into a bitch. Oh. So would you rather, if you're going into war, would you rather battle with Wakanda, the Wakandan army with their weapons, or the Asgardians with their strength?
Yeah, it's space.
Those are hard questions, dude. Asgardians and all of their might. I think Wakanda, and here's why. I think if like the Black Panther were to show up with like the Wakandan army, you could just give up, and they might not kill you, and probably whatever, you know, unless it just turns you over to the federal prison system, which would maybe suck, but maybe they put you like a, they put you on an island somewhere with it would actually be pretty nice. Like, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Whereas I think Earth Guardians would just ground you into dust because you're just a peasant earthling. Or if they threw you in a dungeon, it would just be like, it would suck. I think the Wakandans would be nicer in victory than the Asgardians.
You know what? I didn't even think that far ahead into it, but damn, that's a good answer.
Well, so we are fighting against them, not fighting with... We're not allied with them.
Are they at war with us, or are we going into war with one of those two groups?
We'll do a dealer's choice.
Okay, well, if I'm up against one of those two, yeah, I'll pick the Asgardians, and I will then immediately surrender, like without even a shot fired. That's my strategy.
Yeah, I would prefer if I was going against them. Problem is, Ed is coming up with the best answers, and then I got to follow him up.
I'm making good points here, I guess.
Yeah, you really are. Like, did you do high school debate?
I think about this stuff all the time.
I'm glad it's not just me.
I would prefer to ally myself with the Wakandans. Just because I got all kinds of weird issues with just Nordic mythology.
Oh, dear God. That's a whole another conversation.
And people who are really into Nordic mythology.
that's a strong point.
Yeah.
So I have a little sidebar. So my wife, she used to be responsible for getting books for prisoners in Pennsylvania state prison system. And anytime an inmate requested a book on Norse mythology, she'd replace it with something else. Because, like, if this dude's getting into, like, Norse mythology, he's probably, you know, like, 9 out of 10 probably involved in Aryan Nation or something adjacent to.
Okay, you make a strong point, but I want to say that I hope Old Man Wade gives you negative 90 points for that, because Thor is my favorite character, and you're making me look at him in a whole different light.
But you know what the funny thing about this?
How dare you?
Well, Thor's cool. I mean, Thor's pretty chill from what I know. I'm not keeping up on the Thor comics, but I think Thor's a good guy, right?
Yeah.
But then you've got to deal with, like, Odin and Loki, and his family is a mess, you know? It's like... He's like the one kid who turned out normal, and he's from the crazy family, right?
Oh God, he's not.
Thank you.
Normal.
You get 20 points for making me feel better. I don't give points, but still.
Oh, the point system on the Old Man Wade show was god awful. So we're halfway through, so we'll switch it off. We'll have Matt go first, and then Ed go. So a conversation with these people, but they're in character. Stone Cold Steve Austin or Roddy Piper.
Oh, like, who do I want to talk with?
Yes.
Oh, they would both just kind of drag me, wouldn't they? But in different ways.
Well, it would be Austin, Piper, or was there a third one?
Nope, just Austin or Piper. They're in character.
Yeah, see, I would rather, he would, like, I'm going to pick Piper just because... He wouldn't stun me after he was done humiliating me verbally, you know? Whereas Stone Cold would do both.
Yeah, that's also very true.
Yeah, I'm going to... I'm going to be a little different because I feel like Matt's right. However, with Piper, he's a real wild card. We've seen him smash people on the head with coconuts.
Yeah.
We've seen him do some really crazy stuff, and we just don't... He's just a wild card. I feel like Austin's going to humiliate you and then hit you with the stunner, and then you'd be carried off, but at least you know what you're getting into.
Yeah.
It's one stunner. Yeah. If you can live through that...
It's one stunner if you stay down.
Yeah, well, I'm not getting back up after a stunner. I mean, it's not... You know, even if I could, I'm not... I'm playing possum until... Will haul me off on a stretcher, right?
Yeah. Ollie, what you got?
So as somebody that's been personally stunned on many occasions, my upper spine has grown a callus, so I think I could take a couple from Stone Cold and survive.
Something? Do you get into it with him because he's like lives next door to you or something? Or you need your you trash steal his six pack? It's what's that?
Did you steal his six pack?
Yeah. Did you? I was just saying, like, what's going on that you've been stunned so many?
Do you have a history of backyard wrestling?
No. Oh, I'm sorry. See, we're using again the Old Man Way patented streaming service. So you know, we kind of miss some verbal cues sometimes, but no, I grew up with a lot of wrestling fans, and they're all bigger than me, so you know.
I get you.
So this may be the toughest question on air. Better 80s movie: Big Trouble Little China, RoboCop, or Goonies?
I'm gonna go with RoboCop. If only because it's a movie, unlike, you know, I love the other two. It kind of operates on two levels, you know, and I still think it's a pretty relevant critique of consumerism and American sort of power / political structures. And also it's, you know, super entertaining and never gets preachy.
And he shoots a guy in the dick, so there's that.
Yeah.
I like all three of those movies quite a bit. I think I am also going to go with RoboCop because I really admire, I love when somebody can make a movie that's sort of like really entertaining and relevant, and they're doing it on like a really small budget, right? Like They Live with Roddy Piper. They were really supposed to be B movies. I think RoboCop 2 was not supposed to be a movie that we're still talking about in 2020 as being a great movie, right? It was supposed to be just a really crappy B, low budget B movie, and it's not. It's a really good flick, and I think if you can make a good movie at a RoboCop or They Live or something like that, that's amazing to me. Whereas I love Goonies, but it's like you have Spielberg, you have a big budget, you know, all that stuff. And so I'm going to go with RoboCop.
Ed has no loyalty to the state of Oregon, man.
Was that in Oregon?
Yeah.
It's filmed in Astoria, Oregon.
Yeah.
Because it really looks like an old pirate town, kind of, but... And the house is still there. What's funny is that the house where the film starts in, you know, we call it the Goonies house. It's there in Astoria, but it's not like a museum or something. It's just like some family's house, and they get super annoyed with people drive up and park their driveway and go knock on the door or go walk around. They're like, dude, we live here. This is not a gift shop museum. We're Goonies. This is our home.
That's hilarious.
I think
you'll be all right.
Super Woke, you will be judged by your answer, just so you know. They won't put you well.
I'm going to agree with RoboCop. I mean, RoboCop, I think it's just a better film, a better movie than both of them. It tells a story about capitalism and police violence, and at the time, well, at least at the time, you know, rampant crime in the cities, which, you know, I think is a negative, but it if you watch it today, it's definitely a glimpse of the zeitgeist of the 80s. And again, some of it's very relevant today as well. And that also goes for Stormtrooper Troopers that, you know.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
It's spiritual brother or sister.
Can I just say that I was going to judge you for that answer because Big Trouble Little China is my absolute favorite action movie of all time. I've seen it more times than I should have, but I can't argue with any of those points at all. So I'm gonna hold my head down and move on. Worst movie: Thor: Dark World or Batman v Superman?
I have seen neither film, so I cannot comment.
Which? Are you trying to get these guys blackballed? Are you serious?
No, I'm sorry. No, I have seen all these movies, all those movies, both those. Yeah. Movies. Which one is Thor: Dark World of the three or four?
It's the second one.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's the second one where he
the ether.
Oh boy! See, it's interesting. I didn't think Batman and Superman. You know, that's one of those movies I came to it late, and everyone's like, "Oh, it's awful, awful, awful." And I watched them, like, it's not bad. I mean, it's,
I agree. I absolutely agree.
My expectations maybe have been lowered. I'm going to say, I don't know, but I enjoyed all the Thor movies. That's a tough one for me. I guess I will say I can remember Batman vs. Superman better than I can remember Thor, and I didn't think it was so bad. I thought, you know, it was kind of cool, and I thought Affleck was a pretty good Batman. I'm gonna go with maybe, if I had to choose one to see again, it would not be the Thor movie.
Oh, I did. I think I know your answer, Superbook. I'm guessing you're going to go Batman v. Superman.
I know it's a trick question, and the real answer is the Snyder cut of Batman v Superman. Yeah.
See, you're only saying
nobody knows much yet.
You're only saying it because I have a Thor tattoo on my leg. So, and this is last question, and I'll let you guys go. Best wrestling entrance music of all time.
Just any song, okay.
Any song. I was originally gonna go Hulk Hogan and Bret Hart, but I was like, let's just go with what you think the greatest is of all time.
I am like very prejudiced because he's my favorite wrestler of all time, and he's not the first person to use it. But I will go with Pomp and Circumstance, Macho Man's entrance music. I know what's his face? Oh God, I'm blanking on a 50s wrestler used it first.
But when you hear that, you're thinking graduation.
Gorgeous George used it first.
Oh,
but it was just so Gorgeous George used Pomp and Circumstance first. But it was just so perfect. It was so perfectly matched to Macho Man because it almost didn't make sense as entrance music, but it worked.
Yes.
This one's an easy one for me. Of course, there's lots of great. I started watching wrestling as a little kid, and my first exposure, as a kid, of course, you're not listening to, a lot of heavy metal or whatever. My first exposure to both the Road Warriors and Black Sabbath was watching them on Channel 17, Superstation, Georgia Championship Wrestling. Saw the Road Warriors, Hawk and Animal, came out to Black Sabbath's Iron Man. I hadn't even heard that song before. Until the Road Warriors. And a few years later, I went to a couple wrestling events in the 80s, and the Road Warriors were on the card for one of them. And so I got to see that entrance live, when the lights go off, and then they kick into Iron Man, and people go nuts. And it was awesome. So I got to go with Iron Man for the Road Warriors.
Subo, you got anything, or you kind of like, I got nothing on this?
I do. I like this question because I can actually answer it because I could reference a time when I did watch wrestling, and to kind of commemorate the amalgamation type characters that you guys have in your book, I'm gonna have two that I actually like. The Undertaker. I just remember those funeral bells and like the lights would just turn off and it was just creepy. The Rock, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think I remember it starting off like, "Do you smell what the Rock is cooking?" And I just remember that, just like that energy, just feeling that. And now I want to watch wrestling. Damn it!
Yeah, you have to kind of put in an honorable mention to for Stone Cold Austin, the breaking glass.
When that glass breaks, there's no way you just don't get like a chill up your spine and stand up and start cheering. Even when he was a heel, it's like it's Austin.
Yeah, those are good ones. I mean, again, you hear the funeral bell, you go nuts. You hear the breaking glass, or you hear the Rock, and you just right away you're just going nuts. Yeah, and that's a great entrance.
So I have three, and they kind of break, and I couldn't give one, but they kind of break over like three generations. I think for me, my favorite might be, what's his name? Bobby Roode glorious.
It's so good.
Yeah, it's like it's so good. He almost doesn't deserve it.
Yeah. What's the look? It was originally intended for someone else too.
Shinsuke Nakamura.
Yeah.
That's really good.
Going back, I loved all of Kane's entrance themes for the same reason that Javi loved Undertaker's. It was just like the da. It was just like it was so creepy and scary, and it kind of.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was going to say, is that the organ music? Did he come out to like the really the kind of Phantom of the Opera sort of organ music?
Yes. More Phantom of the Opera type thing. But he had a theme song by Finger 11 called "Slow Chemical," that I love. Like as a song in general, I play it, I bump it. It like it goes really loud, and it doesn't really fit his theme, but I love the music. But if I had to go with my favorite of all time, it may be Mr. Perfect's.
It's a great. I love the video montage. Yeah, like hitting a hole in one and then throwing a touchdown pass to himself. This is such a great montage. That's a classic.
And it's like Mr. Perfect is one of those guys that I just absolutely love. Man, was there anybody as more arrogant as he was about it? I love Mr. Perfect, but like just the. It almost had a very Macho Man kind of theme to it, like you know, it was like a darker, not darker, more evil Macho Man thing. It was just like Macho Man was more happy, and Mr. Perfect was just like kind of "F you, I'm great," you know what I mean?
By the way, Macho Man recorded a tribute song to Mr. Perfect on his one and only rap album. Be a Man. It's the final track, and it's called Perfect Friend.
I have to go get this. But I know, just for the record, Macho Man rapping in that song Be a Man has rapped better than a lot of real rappers now. And it's like, oh my god, he can actually like flow with the beat. I'm like, oh okay.
Also, another negative 20 points for forcing me to look up that track and probably possibly listen to it for the rest of my life.
I'm telling you, you're going to like the song. It's so great.
I know I will like it. Just the title alone and just the premise is just amazing.
Be a man, Hogan!
Yeah. His brother was saying, like, you know, he was, like, super sincere about recording that album. Like, Macho Man was, like, a legit hip-hop fan. And he came to that completely sincerely. He wasn't like cashing in that he like wanted. It was like something he needed to get out there. Just like we had to get WrestleTopia out there. Macho Man had to get a rap album out to the world.
I actually remember. So Matt and I were both, again, living in Chicago at the time, working for the same video game studio. And I remember Macho Man coming to one of the Chicago morning news shows.
Oh, yeah.
The album, and they were just talking to him, and then one of the anchors just said, you know, in a joking way, like, are you for real with this rap stuff? You know, and he's like, I'm for real. The album is for real. The Rascals, like, that's his backup, I think, vocals on the album. The Rascals are real. Here we go, brother. And he started, like, you know, busting out with the songs on the other show, and it was I don't know anything really about hip hop, but I'm
that was the best Macho Man impression I've ever heard in my life.
I'm pleased to hear that you feel like he wasn't terrible. I mean, maybe it's too bad we didn't get more albums.
Well, especially if you've heard Hogan rapping.
Oh, I have. No.
Oh God, it's bad. He has an album from the early 90s. God, what is it? Well, you can just look up I Want to Be a Hulkamaniac. That's the name of the leadoff single. And it is it's one of the worst things you'll ever hear in your life.
To quote Tim Curry in Clue, no.
Not going to happen, bro.
So before we go, tell everyone where they can find you. Drop your Twitter. You got Instagram. The work you've done. Let everyone know. Tell us everything.
Yeah. So real quick. So Matt and I set up this company for the comic book called Suspicious Behavior Productions, and on Twitter we're SB @BP_comics. And we have a real active Tumblr page, thanks to Matt. That's where we're most active. We have a Facebook page for, you know, Suspicious Behavior Productions, where we talk about the comic book. And you can find all 5, soon to be 6 issues. That's the whole miniseries of 6 issues on Comixology. With some exclusive bonus content to be found in all 6 single issues that will not be a part of the trade when it eventually comes out. And then we're going to see. You know, we're going to make a trade. We'll have to see if we can get that into print copies of that into stores or not. And we're working on our next thing. We're working on another miniseries. But, you know, right now our plans are a little bit up in the air, but we know, you know, issue 6 is coming real soon on Comixology, and find us on Twitter or Tumblr and say hi.
You guys have anything individually you're working on? Anything you want to talk about before we go? Or should everyone just stay tuned?
Buy Maneater. I'll say that if you haven't yet, buy Maneater.
So, I mean, if anyone is a fan of the TV sitcom The Goldbergs,
we do that too.
Really? I should mention, yeah, we've been real fortunate to both work on they have a mobile game out now called Goldbergs Back to the 80s, and we've been real fortunate to work on that, and we're, you know, grateful to be working on that project, and it's fun. We got to write some original stories after there are some episodes that were adapted from the TV scripts, but not many, and most of it's like original stories, which is really fun. So if you're a fan of the show, you'll dig the game.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
Like, that is crazy. Yo, man, that's probably me and my wife's one of our favorite shows to sit down and watch.
Yeah.
Adam F. Goldberg, you know, who is the show creator /showrunner, he's actually involved in the whole process. And all the scripts kind of go by him before they go out in the world, which is pretty cool.
Every day I leave work, I just sit on my couch in my tidy whities.
So, picture it now.
So, Super Bowl, tell everybody where they can find us.
All right, so you guys can find Old Man Wade and Super Woke on our Facebook page, Old Man Wade Show on Facebook. You can find articles and specific episodes on our website, oldmanwadeshow.com.
Oldmanwade.com.
You can find me. Say that again. Sorry, old man. Oldmanwade.com, exactly. You could also find us on Twitter. I am Let Shit Record. At Twitter. That wasn't my idea. That was Old Man Wade. I'm giving him all the credit for that one. And Old Man, you're on Twitter.
You can find me on Twitter, Old Man, actually Instagram and Twitter, Old Man Wade. Com on Twitter, I tend to just post a lot of goofy stuff like comic books, Instagram comic strip creators. I've been making it a point to promote a lot of the Black Lives Matter stuff that's going on, because I think it needs to be discussed. We got some articles coming up about that, about how you don't just, it like, you, if you don't feel like protesting, there are other ways that you can make a difference. So we're that article should be coming out soon. You can also find me at Bam Smack Pow, where I write comic book articles and more. Well, it's basically comic book stuff, comic book and comic book related things. You can also find us at blackrabbit.com.
BlackRabbit.com.
BLAQUERABBIT. The Culture Comic Book News Podcast, where we basically just talk about nothing but comic book stuff. So, I'd like to thank our guests for doing this. And also, shout out to Duke the Great for setting this up. Duke's one of the nicest people I've ever met. He's one of the greatest guys in the world. Like, he opened up his heart and then set this up. And I'm actually glad he made this happen, because this was...
Yes.
For me, especially as someone who's currently trying to finish a book and like trying to live his dream and do more than just like work, the fact that you guys work full-time jobs and still have these passion projects and actually make them happen, it's motivating to me, and I'm 100% sure people who are listening to this are going to enjoy the things they say, and I'm even if it's just one person, I'm sure that you'll touch the hearts of one person. So I want to make sure that I say thank you for being as open as you were, and as willing to like do this. And like, I know we were supposed to do this a while ago, but like, you know, life. So
nothing's going on right now, man. What are you talking about?
Ever. So
thank you for having us on. I really do appreciate, you know, the time it takes you guys to do this, and then, you know, put these videos or podcasts onto the web, and it is a lot of fun. We love talking about the comic book and wrestling and everything else. We really appreciate it, and thank you, Duke.
Thank you, Duke.
I'm not gonna say thank you, Duke.
Damn it, Wade.